Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. My name is Kevin Acey, Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. Jay Posner, sports editor of the Union Tribune. Padres just swept the Rockies, their fourth sweep in 15 series this year. They swept four of 52 series in 2019. It is a different year. It is a different kind of team. They are 28-17, 15 games to go. Jay, we can talk magic numbers, but in my opinion, which by the way, their magic number is 12 over the Giants for second place. It's somewhere around 10, 11 for a playoff spot. It's a little complicated to get into magic numbers. What we can talk about is most of these metrics, the people, be it ESPN, Fangraphs, that figure these things out, have the Padres baseball reference at 99.9% to make the playoffs.
Yeah, I saw that ESPN even had them at 100%, which I thought was a little, maybe a
We're
little
rounding
over,
up.
Over
yes.
Rounding, exactly. Their magic number is also 12 to be eliminated for the division title, just to keep that in mind that, you know, everyone keeps saying, oh, why are you looking back? You should be looking ahead. Well, it's just, to me, it's just as close. And as we've said all along, the key is to get into the playoffs. And I don't think catching the Dodgers is, I have never thought it was realistic. I still don't think it's realistic. I also don't think it means all that much at this stage of the season. And especially with the way the playoffs are going to be conducted, the Padres are very likely to get a three home games, a best two out of three at home before they go off to a bubble, play the Dodgers. And I really, the only difference in that, that would be a five game series, I believe.
Division, yes.
Division series. So the Dodgers would have, quote, home field advantage, which would mean they get to hit last in three of those games. That's really about the only difference at this point, other than the quality of a first round opponent. Like we talked about last time, it doesn't mean the Padres shouldn't be trying to win the division. And if they, you know, sweep the Dodgers next week, then maybe they'd have a chance. But it feels like the, you know, the Dodgers just keep getting to beat up on the Diamondbacks right now, which is what the Padres did earlier in the year. And the Dodgers probably look at it like the Padres get to beat up on the Rockies, which they just did. Padres 7-3, I believe, against the Rockies this year is how they finished, which very unusual to have, for the Padres to do that well against the Rockies. But as we've seen, Kevin, this is a different Padre team. And we've seen it all year, but the last couple nights were typical where, you know, we went out. I was out there with you on Tuesday night, and I was thinking the Padres were going to start barring me from Petco Park when they fell behind 3-0. The other two games I went to this year, they lost. But before you knew it, five runs in the first, five runs in the second, that game was over. Last night they fell behind briefly, and bottom of the first inning, they're back in front again. It's just a different team, and I'll be honest, it takes a little getting used to. You know, to think, oh, you know what, just because they're losing, it doesn't mean the game's over.
Yeah, it's like you were talking about, it's unusual for them to go 7-3 against the Rockies. There's so many unusual things. I'm always pointing out how superior the Dodgers are in so many ways and how difficult they are to win. And one of those ways, it's impossible to put them away. How many times have you actually seen, especially later as the Padres did start, or recently as the Padres did start to shrink the gap in 2018, more in 2019. But the Dodgers would win because they would score in the latter innings. Well, that's something the Padres are doing now, be it against a starter or once they get to the bullpen. And that is the trait of, one of the traits of a winner. To your point about catching the Dodgers. So do you remember August 16th, Tommy Pham broke his hamate bone. Day earlier, Kirby Yates had gone on the injured reserve list. That August 16th game against the Diamondbacks in Arizona that Tommy Pham exited the final at batter of the game, the Padres lost their fifth straight. They fell under 500. They were headed to Texas. They are 17-5 since then. Right. Of course, the Dodgers are 16-5. And the team coming to town for four games now is 15-6. That's the San Francisco Giants. This division is bonkers.
It is. And that is really, if you think about it, the last thing you said about the Giants record is way more unfathomable than anything else. I mean, we knew the Dodgers were going to be really good. We thought the Padres would be good. I mean, maybe not quite as good as they've been, but we knew they were going to be good. What in the world is with the Giants? I mean, they were awful early in the year. I mean, the Padres bullpen, we saw them, in late July. Padres won two out of three up at Oracle Park. The bullpen blew leads two nights in a row. And then the Padres came back and won in the 10th inning on one of those games. But the Giants did not look like a very good team. Gabe Kapler was just being ripped beyond ripping by people up there. You know, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. I mean, obviously he's following a legend in Bruce Bochy. And all of a sudden, you know, the playoffs start today. The Giants, I think, are the seventh seed and playing either the Braves or the Cubs in the first round. So I'm not sure what exactly has gotten into him. I mean, obviously, Mike Yastrzemski has been tremendous. Saw something the other day that he hit his eighth two-strike home run of the year this year, which leads baseball. That's pretty impressive. I was looking at the pitching, Trevor Cahill tonight, you know, journeyman guy. Don't think of him in general. Johnny Cueto pitches tomorrow. Good pitcher throughout his career, but his ERA this year is 4.5. After that is Kevin Gausman on Saturday. And then Sunday is Logan Webb. And the great thing about Logan Webb is he pitched 8 games last year for the Giants, and he had a 5.22 ERA. He's pitched 9 games this year for the Giants, and he has a 5.23 ERA. So very consistent, Logan Webb. But you would think the Padres have the advantage in terms of the rotation in all 4 of those games, which, of course, doesn't necessarily mean anything once they play. But you would like the Padres' chances in all 4 of those games if you just looked at the starting pitching.
The Giants are hitting the heck out of the ball. Brandon Belt has moved into being a MVP candidate. I don't know that he would get one of my top 10 votes. He's largely a platoon player these days. Right. But I'll tell you what, they must have been playing a lot of teams that he could hit against, because in their run here of these 21 games for them since August 17th, he's leading the National League in virtually every offensive category. It's absolutely insane. So, and I think they got to beat up on the Rockies a little bit, just as the Padres did here recently. Certainly it is when you play a team. I think they got to play the Diamondbacks. So the Padres, though, are the kind of team this year that you say, yeah, it's cool. They should do well against these pitchers. Yeah, they probably will. We'll see. I think their magic number over them is 12. You can really, with 3 out of 4, I mean, you can really set the Giants back and start to think, no matter what happens in the series after this, which is the Dodgers next Monday, Tuesday, right, Wednesday at Petco, really start to think about setting your rotation up and start looking at what is your pitching staff as a whole going to look like for the playoffs. So I think that's the importance of this series, is how comfortable can you get by winning, say, 3 out of 4?
Right. And winning 3 out of 4 would cut the magic number in half against the Giants. Yep. Down from 12 to 6. I mean, honestly, the biggest thing is just don't get swept in this situation. Even if you were to lose 3 out of 4, you would still have a 2-game lead in the loss column. Might get a little bit nervous, but I think the Padres, I mean, even if they struggled over the next week, which there's no reason to think they will, but there's still plenty of, they don't need to win that many more games to get to the playoffs. The big thing is if they can keep that distance between them and the Giants, then they can start to, as you said, start to really play around with what do we want to do for the postseason? Who do we want to start? Who do we want to have ready to go on the 29th, which I believe would be game 1 of the series, whether it's 29th or 30th. But how do we want to have the rotation set up for those 3 games against the Phillies or whoever else is going to be here?
I really do think for this team, too, that and I'll tell you in a minute why I agree with you wholeheartedly, also that it's not so important that they like stay this hot or something. But I do think for this team, which is so new to winning and so new and all year, coaches and veteran players, Jace Tingler, talked about playing loose. And that was when they weren't winning so much. You know, they're hovering around 500 and that stuff. And now you see that they are, and there's this belief and how contagious that can be for a team like the Padres. And I'm not talking about your dreaded momentum, Jay. I'm talking about like the, because that can end any night, right? Yeah. Logan Webb on Sunday could go throw a no-hitter. And what happened to the Padres, you know, momentum? But it is important to this team that they continue to believe who they are. Now, the reason that maybe, hey, you hit a little bit of a rough patch, not only have they become such a new team, a quarter of the players on their active roster right now weren't with them when they arrived in Colorado. some of them weren't with them when they left Colorado 10 days ago. They're going to get Eric Hosmer and Tommy Pham back. So let's say they struggle here. They're going to get another shot in the arm maybe the last week or the second to last week of the season, the final 11 games that they play in. Those are eight games they play in 11 days. They're going to get a couple veteran guys who they absolutely believe in, who have still continued to be around to be a part of the team while they're injured. And so, you know, I really do think that this team and the people I've talked to, including this morning in the organization, not like they're cruising into the postseason, but that's where their mindset is now.
I really think one positive, and along with what you said, in terms of continuing to play well and, you know, whatever that means over the next week against the Giants and the Dodgers with these seven games, you know, if you go 4-3, 3-4, 5-2, whatever the case may be, I think one thing that might do, and if you can keep a distance between yourself and the Giants, is hopefully that means you don't feel like you need to rush Tommy Pham back or rush Eric Hosmer back. I think that's one area where I look at it and think it'd be great as for the Padres to have those two guys ready for the playoffs. I think you can also, to me as the amateur doctor from having watched sports all these years, I really think rushing them back would not be a good thing. There's no reason that they need to feel like they have to play next week. They just need to get some at-bats before the postseason. And, you know, you're dealing with hand injuries with both of those guys. I think, you know, those are so dangerous when you're dealing with guys trying to swing the bat as much as they do. And look, it's not just swinging the bat four times in a game. It's all the swings in batting practice and everything else. So I really would hope, you know, that the Padres would be cautious with both those guys. There's no need to rush them back. Just be able to get them enough at bats so that when the postseason comes around, they're ready to go. I also think it's interesting, and we can sort of switch into the pitching mode here. So much competition right now.
Oh, man.
For the postseason roster. I mean, not just the three or four starting spots that you're going to need, but in the bullpen as well. You know, Pagan is eligible to come back today, I believe, right?
Yes.
And then, you know, you had Altuve pitching in the seventh inning last night, looking really impressive. I mean, guys throwing 98 right past Trevor Story on a couple of those pitches. So there's another guy you can throw in to the quote rotation in the bullpen, along with, you know, for late inning work. And then that doesn't even count some of the guys that you have for early on. I mean, you know, with guys like Strom and Tim Hill, where you already
Adrian Morahone has looked phenomenal.
Adrian Morahone's looked great. There's three lefties right there that we just mentioned. Four righties in terms of Altuvia, or I guess not Pomerantz, not, but I've lost track of lefties and righties. But there's a lot of guys that they have. Pagan, Rosenthal, Altuvia. You've got, you know, the left side, you've got Pomerantz and Strom and Hill and Morahone. So that's four lefties. I'm sure I've left out a couple of righties that are really obvious that you'll remind me of right now. But there are a lot of pitchers and not that many spaces that are going to be available. They don't need 15 pitchers in the playoffs.
Especially when they're going to move a couple starters there, or, you know, at least have them tentatively there, depending on how you're going to work that and piggyback. And I would think right now you're going to start a series with Clevinger based on his experience. And of course, that will depend on the next couple starts, perhaps, because if Denelson Lamed is showing you that he consistently is being a guy that is going to give you six shutout innings or whatever at the start of a game, then you're going to forget, and it'll be easy for Jace Tingler since he wasn't here, you're going to forget how wild and inconsistent this guy can be, because that's not who he is anymore. So maybe I'm wrong and it's not Clevinger, but I think that's who it is. But you're going to try and go Clevinger, Lamed, Davies, and you know, that's just how it is, I guess, unless Richards and Paddock really changed some minds here in the last couple of weeks. But then you're going to have those two guys down in the bullpen. And so there really isn't a lot. And you're going to want to have flexibility on your bench. So you're going to get Campusano back and you're going to start setting up, you know, a little bit more there.
Right. Pierce Johnson's another guy I left out as a right-hander. I'm not, you know, guys like Guerra and Stammen, I wouldn't think we would see in the postseason, but certainly a Pierce Johnson would be added to that mix. And I don't know. I mean, you know, Clevinger looked great the other night after the first inning. How enthused are the Rockies to be hitting when it's 10-3 or whatever? Not sure. But yeah, I mean, I think it's really between him and Lamed and Davies. Those three guys seem to have the edge right now. But Garrett Richards pitched well, really well in his last start. And I'm sure that, you know, Paddock going tonight is knows that he's sort of behind right now in the race. And if he wants to be a big part of the postseason, he's going to have to put together a couple of really good starts here against the Giants and the Dodgers over the next week.
Not that I'm here to give a pep talk to Chris Paddock or anything, but let's say he's going to the bullpen, which, you know, gosh, it would certainly seem like right now. I kind of think that you see a lot of times in the postseason where a guy like that could pitch, have an important role in a game.
Oh, for sure.
Because Garrett Richards starts game four or something of the division series. And, you know, all of a sudden they go, it's the two outs in the fourth inning. And they say, yeah, all right. And Chris Paddock comes in for three. And you're like, wow, Chris Paddock was the hero of this game. And for a team that hasn't had a lot of wins in the postseason and is playing in this theoretical game four, I would think that Chris Paddock would be viewed as something of a hero in that situation. Yeah. So there's a
– Oh, it could be. And, I mean, there's a question on here about having Morihone open because, you know, the Dodgers can struggle against lefties. You know, that's another possibility. I mean, there's just so many different ways to approach
– Great point.
This that they're going to be able to figure, you know, that they're going to work on over here in the next couple of weeks. And that's why I say it's important to keep that distance between themselves and the Giants. Don't let the Giants leave here thinking that they have a chance. You know, win three out of four, you've pretty much eliminated the Giants. And now you really can focus on, you know, working guys out and sort of experimenting a little bit and maybe even getting guys a rest.
Well, the beauty of... Yeah,
the Padres. I know they have those off days, I guess, where you don't even need to give guys a rest because they've got the rest built in. But I was going to say, if you could give Tatis a day, give Machado a day, those guys have been out there. You know, Trent Grisham, those guys have been out there every day. I'm not sure I want to rest Will Myers. I think the way Will Myers is going right now, you just let Will Myers go and let Will Myers be Will Myers and. You know, that was a guy we talked about early in the year and in the offseason, and it was so much, what's going to happen with Will Myers? They really need Will Myers to be good. Well, look what's happened. Will Myers has been really, really good, you know, for 45 games so far.
He's played well in the right field. I know there have been a couple times where, you know, whatever, in Oakland, the grass was weird the other night or last night, I think it was. He made a late error that was inconsequential, but he's mostly been really good. He is so locked in, and that's been a thing that they've worked on for so long. And I just do think, and look, the reality is a 60-game season does not make you say Will Myers is back. But if Will Myers can take into the next 162-game season the mentality that he has maintained and been unable to maintain for 40, however many he's played, 41 or 42 games, he's never been able to have a stretch like this where he is that locked in. If he can do that, then it will translate to 162. It's been pretty darn impressive. It really has.
Well, I mean, you look at the offensive guys. I was thinking for a minute last night, like, man, Myers, you could even make a case he's starting to gain as almost an offensive MVP at this point. Still not as good as Tatis, still not as good as Machado. But if the way Will Myers, and even, I mean, I probably put him ahead of Cronenworth right now, but it's funny, you look at it, and if Will Myers, as good as he's played this year in an OPS almost at 1,000 right now, I think 994 was the last I saw late last night. If Will Myers is your third best offensive player right now, that's a pretty good offense you've got, you know, with if he's number three. And that doesn't even factor in, like I said, Cronenworth and, you know, Hosmer when he's healthy, you know, Trent Grisham. So it's and Austin Nola, you know, coming in. So it's been a you know, it's certainly been an impressive offense so far, and the pitching as well. And it's easy to see why they're 28-17 when you look at some of the numbers.
Yeah, I'm not a Will apologist. Okay, I am. But it's not his fault they gave him $20 million a year. and decided to make him the voice, the face, the leadoff hitter, the second hitter, the third hitter, the fourth hitter. Will Myers was pretty honest a few years ago that he's a role player, a very, very, very good and well-compensated role player who needed to be better and more consistent. But this is what, like, good teams look like. Good team, you know, really good teams have a Fernando Tatis and a Manny Machado. And I have been looking a little bit more deeply at the MVP race since I have an MVP vote. And I've tried to break it down. I've made my case in my head. I was going to write about it for Manny Machado based on the clutch hits, the game-winning hits, the game-altering hits, because he does that more than anyone on the team and really as much or more than most people in the league. And but Fernando Tatis' statistics are just so far and away better than anybody else's on the team that I'm pretty sure I'm going to eventually come to the conclusion that it's him. And thank you, Jacob. I'm a Will apologist too. I mean, even a guy who makes 20 mil and disparages West Coast Mexican food needs an apologist every once in a while.
Well, don't apologize for the Mexican food part, because you don't want to go down that road. But certainly what he's done on the field, and with in relation to Tatis and Machado, there's still 2 weeks left. You know, 2.5 weeks to go, and you know there's no reason to be filling out ballots yet, and you never know what's.
Did you not read the newsletter, Jay? I said that I don't look always until the final week. Come on. But it's fascinating because I'm constantly looking at these things and the different and right up there every time. And it finally made me go, do I need to stop ignoring Will? Because you know, he's at least in the conversation. And that's amazing. I forget. I saw a few things pop up today that the Padres have 5 or 6 guys that are, you know, leading or in the top 20 or top 10 in like virtually every advanced metric there is that kind of tell you where they are in relation to others. And I'm going to do again later this week, as I did last week or after the trade deadline in the newsletter, another look comparing the Padres and the Dodgers, because Will Myers talked about it the other day and he verbalized what I had verbalized is basically it had been a joke to compare the two teams previously. And it is no longer a joke when you go, here's this team and all of their advanced metrics. And here's this team. The Padres are right there. We don't want to get ahead. I just got in my head. Maybe we talk about the Dodgers series, but let's not do that. No, we got time. We'll go crazy.
We'll do that Monday. I do want to mention both Lamed and Davies have ERAs under 2.5 as well. So you throw that in to the offense, and then you throw in, you know, a reliever like Drew Pomeranz, who hasn't even given up a run yet this season, and you add a Trevor Rosenthal. And again, it's easy to see why, you know, people are excited about the Padres at this stage. And I'm looking forward to this weekend. And, you know, the Giants have been so good, and I haven't had a chance to watch them play much, and eager to see them come in and give the Padres a test and see, you know, see where both teams stand at this point.
This is how it works. Like the bullpen trend and the high velo guys coming in, that's great. And I know the Yankees, the Rays, a lot of teams have been very successful with this, but you know what else, like what most playoff contenders have, they got starters going 6 and 7 innings. And since the bullpen and this 9-3 run, Padres bullpen has the second lowest ERA in the majors over the past 12 games. All right. I think it's the 28th of August, because during that time, the Padres rotation has the second lowest ERA in the majors. And they've been going, I think it's 5 2/3 innings on average, whereas previously they've been going 4 2/3 innings on average. So when Jace Tingler doesn't have to go, how do I get through the sixth? He just has to go, how do I get through the 7th, 8th, and 9th? Huge difference. Huge.
Yeah. And even like I said, if Pagan comes back tonight, that's another option to go in there. So anyway, Kevin, have a great weekend. I'll see you out there for one of the games, and hope everyone enjoys their weekend as well. And we will come back on Monday and we'll talk about what happened. And of course, we'll look ahead to the Dodgers series.
Take care.